Okay, take it away.
So I will talk about open source projects and see what kind of tools that exist and for what needs according to the projects. So I choose four main tasks or four main issues. The first one is to browse and share a collection of documents. And so I will show one of the tools that were in the list. Then I will talk about tools about NLP, like name entity recognition that we already talked about, or name entity disambiguation and geoparsing. Then the third one is about visualization and exploration of data. And we also already talked about visualization this morning. And the last one is about manual annotation, and again, that can be used as a visualization tools. So about browsing and sharing documents, there are one tool called the Open Online Newspaper Initiative that was originally used to make the Chronicling America. So it's a kind of archives for newspapers in the United States. And you can have access to historic American newspaper. You can search among these documents, and it provides a set of functions for loading or modeling and indexing this kind of data. There are several platforms or several tools like this that exist, but here is just an example of the ones, and specifically for newspapers in America. Another tools that can be interesting to have a look at, but this one is not free. It's not open source and it's not free. So it's based on the Elasticsearch engine and with a Kibana interface, and it's allowed to index and search and visualize information. So the idea is that you have a kind of databases with all your documents, all your data, and then you can build some dashboards like this, and you can choose different visualization tool. And so you can see workloads, or you can make queries on your data, and you can have maps, you can have diagrams, and all these kind of tools. So here maybe it's just interesting to see what is possible. And what is interesting, what can be reused, or what can be developed for the project. So about NLP tools, here I take an example of the Open NER project, but the process or the workflow is quite the same in almost all the named entity recognition tools. So in this case, these tools make named entity recognition. It make also detection of sentiment or opinion. So you can have a polarity on your document saying if it's positive or negative. It's open source and it's multilingual. So the workflow is as you can see here. So we have some pre-processing step. So the first one is the language detection, because we are in multilingual tool. And then we have the classical tokenization part of speech tagging, which are typical in named entity recognition and in NLP. And then we have specifically the task of named entity recognition and classification, and named entity disambiguation. And in this case, I don't remember exactly for these tools, but these two tasks can be done by several methods. It can be used by symbolic methods with rule-based methods, or with machine learning methods, as we talked here yesterday. And there is an interface to see the results. So you have your list of documents, and you can browse on your lists. You can select the documents you're interested in, and you have the results with the annotation. So you have a color by for instance, here is the named entity recognition. So you have the color for each named entity, if it's a person, a place, or an organization. And so you have the sentiment, the general sentiment or the opinion, the polarity of your document, if it's something positive or negative.
Is this Wall Street Journal?
I don't know, it was an example given on their website. But yes, usually it's used on the newspapers. It's all sometimes opinion mining or sentiment analysis is also done on reviews and things like this. So there are a lot of NLP tools that exist. Recently, there's the Spacy Python library that have a good performance and that works for French. It's a multilingual. And here is a table that is on their websites comparing with two other tools, the NLTK and the Core NLP. So we can see that almost all the tools do the same task. They do the tokenization, the part of speech tagging, the sentence segmentation, and the entity recognition. And then we have some specificity, for instance, the entity linking, or the methods that use neural networks, models, and for instance, integrated world vectors, such as world embeddings, and some that do the coreference resolutions. So these tools are not exactly, well, you have some API that you can query online to get some results, but if you have a lot of data and a lot of documents, you have to build your own code and use this tool in your Python program or things like this. So you have to program a little bit to use this kind of tools. So now I will show three examples of results. So this is for the Stanford named entity recognition tool. You can test it online. Also here the examples is for English, but it's also working for French, but it's better, it gets better results in English. So here it's a standard named entity recognition tool. You have the main categories of named entity like organization, location, and persons, with the different colors, or here we see the results. I think the document is an historical newspaper from Scotland, so describing the environment and the changes in the environment. So with the same text, I also made a test with the Edinburgh GeoParser, which is specifically dedicated for geographical information and geographical named entity recognition. So in this case, we don't see clearly here, but we can see that all the entities that are annotated on the left are the same that we have here in only for the location. So we only have here the locations that are in the text. We don't have the person's name and the organization and so on. And for each location names, we have the list of coordinates that may match this name. So we can see that the recognition part works pretty well. We have well recognized the name of the location on the text, but we have still a lot of problems for the toponym resolutions. That means that we are not able to precisely locate those names on the map. Even if those names exist, are contemporary names, and so on. So here, it uses, GeoNames as a gazetteer. And so we see that if we have a text and we don't say where it is located, so here we say, we know that it's in Scotland, but when we query GeoNames, we don't put the boundaries, it's a worldwide query. And so we have this kind of results, which is not very good for the location of place names. And then I also tried the Perdido GeoParser. So this is a parser that I developed. Here the example is in English, but the parser is at the beginning it was designed for French. And so it's exactly the same text. And in the case of the Perdido Joe parser, the objective here is to annotate and to recognize all the geographical information that we can find in the text, and not only the named entity. So we have also the spatial relations and the link between the spatial relations and the named entity. We have also the motion verbs or perception verbs. So for instance here, if we have a, you can see the construction. So for instance, in blue is the named entity that have been recognized. Then we have also the spatial relations, and we have some construction with the verbs. So like constructing a great motorhighway through the moor of Ranuk and Glencoe. So we have these kind of constructions with a semantic annotation attached to it. And then we have also the toponym resolutions. So here it just focus on the, I made a boundaries, I think, on the query, saying that it's in the United Kingdom. But we can see that we have still a lot of error, and that we are not able to understand that the article speak about something that is located in Scotland. And we have a lot of error, a lot of entities that are not place names, but we have answers from the query for these names on the gazetteer, so we assume that maybe it's a place names, where they're actually not. So in this case, the problem was because it was designed only for place names recognition, and the fact is that even if we are interested only on geographical name entity, it's almost mandatory to also look for other entities in order to discover them when we query the gazetteers, in order to avoid too much noise in the results. Now for the visualization issue or problem, there are several solutions. The first one is to use desktop software like Gephi, for instance, which allows to load data, to load spreadsheets and all CSV files, and to create graphs and networks, and you can visualize it, you can do some calculation over your network. So for instance, the network that we showed this morning was made with Gephi. Actually, the network was built with a Python library, and then the visualization steps were done with Gephi. Then you can also use some Python library, like Matplotlib, for instance, that you can plot diagrams or graphs. But there is also some libraries that are dedicated for geographical representations, and you can map your data directly from Python, like the Geoplotlib or the Folium libraries. And you can also have some interactive results. You can have your data plot on the Google Maps, for instance. The third one is a JavaScript library, so like the D3 library. Here you have a lot of possibility. You have a lot of, so the pictures in the bottom is from the D3 website. You can choose about among a lot of possible representation, like diagrams, maps, bar charts, and so on. And it can be integrated directly on the HTML pages, so you can use directly this on the websites to show your data. There is also, for instance, this tool, Palladio, which is used to visualize complex historical data, so you can load again a CSV or spreadsheets with your data, and you can have access to different way of visualization. So you can visualize with maps. You can also have a timeline if you have a timestamp associated with your data. You can visualize as a table or as graphs also. So depending the nature of your data, you can have several ways of visualization. And it's directly online, so there's a website where you can put your data out of it. Uh, Yes, and now about manual annotation. So we saw yesterday that it is almost mandatory to build a corpus or ground truth corpus for the evaluation of your system or for the training of your system if you use machine learning. So there are several tools that exist. So yesterday we talked about BRAT. So BRAT is a named entity dimension detection tools that helps you to do the annotation manually. And it can also be used for the visualizations of annotation. So yes, we saw that yesterday. You can just select span of text and you choose if it's a named entity, you choose the type of entity that it is. And you can also put links or relations between the entities that you annotate. So you can load your own schema if you have made an XML schema. You can load your own schema with the kind of entity that you want to annotate, and then you make your annotation. And what is interesting also is that it provides an evaluation system, so you can compare the evaluation among, you can compare for the same documents several annotations. So you can have a score of accuracy between several annotations. So either if it's several annotations, several manual annotations from several annotators, or if it's a manual an automatic annotation compared to a previous manual annotation. Another tool to make the manual annotation is the Recogito tool from the Pelagios platform. So in this case, it's for semantic annotations for text and images. So I think that yesterday we had the question if it's possible to annotate images. So there are tools that exist. And in this case, you can annotate images just like text. You just put your images and then you build polygons on your images and you add semantics tags saying, okay, here that's the other body, or I don't know what you want to annotate on your image. And for the text, it's exactly like for BRAT. You can select span of text, you add tags. I think that in this case, the tags are already defined. I'm not sure if you can define your own tags, but maybe. And for instance, what is interesting in this case is for places, when you say that a span of text or words is referred to a place names, the system will make a query automatically to gazetteers and to provide some results if he finds a matching in the gazetteers. So for instance here, we selected Ithaca, we said it's a place, and then automatically the system say, okay, I have a matching in the gazetteers Pleiades, and we can confirm if it's if we think that it's the right location, or we can change and modify and specify another location for this name. So in the end, there are a lot of tools that exist that can be used or that can be reused. And the questions are, well, there are several questions that you need to ask for the project. The first one is, do we want to provide online tool for text analysis? I mean, do the end users will make the text analysis, or the text analysis is already made before, and we just provide the annotated text online for visualization and exploration. So, because in this case it will be the same kind of tools that you need to use, and as the corpus is relatively big, it's maybe simple to process the text offline and just provide a collection of text that is annotated with the information that you want to annotate. And then provide these annotations on a kind of archives and just provide tools to have a look at this data that you have annotated. So yes, this is the two questions. And behind that, the question is what kind of information you want to annotate on the text, what kind of semantics you want to add from the text, and what is the format that you want to produce, if it's XML or, I don't know, JSON file, or, and so on. And the last one is, what kind of tools for the data visualization, what kind of visualization? So we saw already some this morning. And so in order to, if we know what are the information that we want to annotate and generate, and if we want, and if we know the type of data or visualization that we want to provide, then we can choose the appropriate tools and the appropriate methods. And I think that a lot of methods already exist and that you can reuse on website applications without too much problem. I think the most complicated part here would be about, the toponym resolution part. I think that the toponym or the annotation of information will be quite well. But the toponym resolution, you will need some data, you will need geographical resources of the period or of the coverage that you are interested in. And this will be more complicated, but it's possible. And it is interesting. It is not it is still an open research problem in NLP or in geoparsing to get good results and have accurate results for toponym resolutions in particular. And I think I'm done. Yeah.
And that last part is where you were mentioning earlier that you and Katie are trying to use the text itself to assist in resolving the toponym.
Yeah, there are several methods, and yes, that we saw this morning, that was the case. We thought that in our case, because it's the encyclopedia, which is something particular, we say, okay, the encyclopedia is the knowledge of the world at that time, and we will use this at the gazetteer. It's supposed to be the gazetteer of that time, so we will use this like this. Well, it's supposed to be.
It's a gazetteer that questions its gazetteer-ness.
The journal says that it's the full record, a compendium for all the world, for all the viewers. So,
yes,
we could take it at face value.
Mm, yeah. Well, yeah. But I don't know. I think it's like a nice lesson for gazetteers make claims about the relationship between a location and a place name, which are far more, far too confident than they probably should be.
How much in your project did you, I doubt there's anything used off the shelf, but how much of it is custom building a tool to your application, and how much of it is, say, forking an already existing project and tailoring it?
I don't know exactly. We used the Perlido system that I already developed before. It was developed for French, contemporary French, and for specific documents describing itineraries. So it was, at the beginning for me, in my previous task, it was easier because I know that in the text I almost found almost only geographical names. So I haven't the problem with persons' names, organization, and so on. So we improved the tools for this purpose. We improved the tool to integrate a dictionary of persons' names and things like this. And then now we try to improve this to fit the way the articles in the encyclopedia are written, because there are specific patterns that we found in almost every article, so we can extract more information and we can understand the relations between the words in the articles more easily than in every text. So only this kind of rules have been changed, but it's not that much.
Okay.
After that, the main problem for us is the geographical resources. For instance, we made some tests using geonames, and it was terrible. So we thought, okay, because when you query on geonames, it's already have some kind of heuristics that sort of filter the results. So for instance, he says he prefers to rank first the place, the populated place with more populations or things like this, that in our case, it's nonsense. So we try to just query geonames on local databases and make our own heuristics. But it's not well working at the moment.
Because geonames is designed with the use case that like someone's trying to look up a name they heard, where is it, right? And then, so the places are the most populated,
yeah.
The places are most likely the place that somebody might have been thinking of.
Yeah, what is funny is even if you query for France, the first results won't be France. It would be Fort-de-France, which is a city.
Huh.
And just because there is France in the name, and just because it's a city, and they prefer to rank a city rather than a country. So
huh.
These kind of weird things that
yeah.
we saw. So.
Yeah.
And the main problem is not that. The main problem is that all the entities that we have are not in geonames. But
yeah.
even those that are in geonames, it's hard to find them in the first rank, so that's really a problem.
And it's weird because geonames has all the alternate names.
Yeah.
But it's unclear how those are actually queried when you know you.
Yeah.
When you get the results
mm-hmm.
back, how those are included? It's a black box. You think, oh, well, it has the French version of this name, but it doesn't always appear as, like, giving you that result as a top result.
Are you using it just through, like, its API and calling it and then having it? Because you can't get it, it's not, like, fully open, right? You can't just
get
it.
Yes,
you can
download
it.
Yes,
okay.
You can download it.
Because I've used the ArcGIS one, and it's only accessible through an API. Like, you can't get behind to see how
so
it's put together.
Yeah, but I mean, precisely because it was this black box, that's why
we
downloaded
it. Then, yeah.
Okay.
We tried to make our own heuristics to sort the results and filter the results, but it's not. We didn't have time to finish that.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's a work in progress.
In progress, yeah.
Yeah.
But there are also existing gazetteers and historic gazetteers now, but there is not world coverage.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, for instance, ancient Greece or things like this. But
which is actually very helpful for the encyclopedia, as you saw all the like classical names. It's really helpful to use that, but that's like one part of the corpus.
Right.
So.
Ludovic, I wanted to use this opportunity to go back to the definition you showed me before lunch about barbarie. So it was interesting because in the encyclopedia, they define barbarie as a geographical space.
Yeah.
So in the case of this work, how do we locate that space, which never existed? Because on the one hand, it shows the limited knowledge they had at the time. And today we know that no country in Africa was called Barbary. Because when it was mentioned as Barbary, when Catherine gave her presentation, in my mind, I was just thinking it was a concept about what they saw at the time as non-civilized people. But it was
in fact.
But in their definition, it was a geographical space, a kind of country, or I
it
don't
is.
know.
It is. It is. It's North Africa.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it's a choice to call it that.
Okay.
And it's not because they don't know the name; it's because they make their own name for the Maghreb.
Yes. So, do you see the confusion in my mind?
In our case, it's easy to locate that if we interpret and understand all the relations that you have in the text. Because in our case, it's a definition. It's a definition that locates this entity.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a lot of special relations. It says, okay, it's in Africa, it's west, you have the Ocean Atlantic, you have the Mer Mediterranee, you have the country on the west, and so on. So if we know the location of the other entity, we can give a location of this one.
Okay.
In our case, it would be easy because we have the definition of the location of this entity.
Yeah.